Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
It is Friday, February 11th, Super Bowl weekend. I don't know about you guys, and I know we have, you know, I look at the analytics of the show and kind of where people are from, and I know we have a huge market in Ohio. Obviously, the biggest state we have. Actually, Cincinnati is the third biggest city behind Columbus and Cleveland. So first of all, Cincinnati, step your game up. You can't have Cleveland ahead of you in the listeners. So if you are from Cincinnati, in the Cincinnati area, you better go tell 10 people about this show, because I want Cincinnati to at least be second to Columbus. Columbus is a lock at one because of the Ohio State podcast, because I live here. It's where I know the most people. It's where the events are. I mean, that's just going to happen, right? Columbus is going to be one. But let's get Cincinnati to two, because we are going to talk today. Huge episode, Super Bowl breakdown. Joe Burr is taking on the Super Bowl in year two. Who would have thought? I mean, I guess if you could have predicted a quarterback to do what he's done, he would be the one to predict it, especially if you listen to this show in 2019 and that season and all the analytic breakdowns. I mean, he had the best college season of any quarterback in the history of the game. And so, you know, just an exciting matchup, him and Matt Stafford. Right, Chris? Matt Stafford kind of gets brought back from life after being in Detroit and just wasting away his career. And we're going to talk about it all and how, you know, we went up against Matt Stafford when I was at Florida, and what a career he had in college, and then just to be wasted away. And awesome for him that he is now in LA with some talent around him and some guys that can block for him and a competent head coach and organization. But speaking of the Super Bowl, we have the big money board. If you haven't bought a square yet, I need you to get on Venmo, shoot $100 to Cameron Media, at Cameron Media, no underscore, no space, nothing, because we are almost half full. And here's the board works. If we fill up halfway, that means I can cover all the payouts, right? And then everything after that is a donation to the charity. So if as long as we fill up halfway, I'm good. I think we got like 10 squares left to get to the halfway marker. So if we get there, I'm not worried about it. I'm not going to have to pay out any money that otherwise would get donated. So help me out. If you already bought a square, or if you're not interested, you can always tell someone about it, right? Text a family group chat, friends group chat. Just say, hey, listen, I don't know if you listen to Zach's podcast, but they're doing a fundraiser if you're interested. And then copy and paste a tweet and just send it to your friends, to send it to your family. Help us fill this board up. So I appreciate your help in that. Cameron Media, you know the deal. I don't need to keep talking about it. But anyways, Chris, Super Bowl weekend. Tell me this first. Before we get started, what are you doing for the Super Bowl?
I'll probably just watch it at home with my family. I do have to be up super, super early Monday morning, unfortunately, because I do the morning show on my local hometown radio station. So really no time to kind of go out and party the way I would like to. But I'll be watching it with the gang. I have a six-year-old little brother and a seven-year-old little sister. So I'm trying to get my brother like wrapped into the football world, but it's been a little bit of a struggle. I can't even lie.
Yeah. He's young. You know, how it is. Sometimes it takes, you know what it was for my son, Madden, playing Madden on Xbox and then playing the sport. Those are the two things that got him hooked. And now he's a middle schooler, and I think I did tell you about this. He has like, I don't know, 15,000 followers on TikTok. He's 12, right? But he makes all these edits and he knows the algorithms. And like I told him, I was like, I'm going to hire you to create a TikTok for Menace to Sports, because I don't entirely understand it. I kind of do, but he's ridiculous at it. Now, so moral story, now he's obsessed, but he was similar at six. I mean, he loved Ohio State. I was a coach, so he loved going to games and that kind of stuff. But, you know, the NFL, he probably could have named a couple teams, but he didn't know much. And now he just knows. I mean, he knows more than I ever imagined. He'll ask me about a player. I'm like, who is that? Let me Google him. I don't know. And it'll be like the second best corner on the Broncos. And I'm like, how the fuck do you know that guy's name? But he's nuts.
So it's tricky for me, man. My mom went to Michigan is kind of the bigger issue. My mom went to Michigan, and then she just graduated with her master's from Penn State. So, you know, there's a lot of divide in the household over what team you should root for.
Absolutely. Well, I think that you will prevail, Chris. I know you are a committed and relentless human being, so I think you'll win that battle. I have faith in you. But I think first and foremost, we got to shout out former Buckeye Mike Vrabel. Just got announced. I saw this morning, and I see you have it in the notes. The NFL Coach of the Year is Mike Vrabel. Mm-hmm. And it's unbelievable if you really follow. And this is a point I want to make that I think everyone should really listen to. I've told the story about when I got hired at Ohio State. The first thing I did as an employee at Ohio State, the very first thing I did, I showed up at 5:45 a.m. at the Woody Hayes Athletic Center and walked in and sat in the staff room, and Mike Vrabel interviewed with us. And I'm sitting here like, what the fuck? Like, I only know Mike Vrabel from catching touchdown passes from Tom Brady in Super Bowls. And I'm sitting here basically as a panel evaluating Mike Vrabel as a coach. I'm sitting here like, whoa, how did I get here? I'm 27 years old, and I'm going to tell Urban what I think about Mike Vrabel. Are you kidding me? Same. But it was awful. I mean, it was one of the worst interviews I've ever been a part of. And mainly because he'd never really, he coached that interim year with Luke Fickell, but he wasn't a coach yet. He was still a player. And like Urban asked him, he's like, all right, teach me if I'm a freshman D end. Teach me how to, like, I want to learn how to pass rush. Teach me how to do it. And Vrabel couldn't do it. It was like, well, you know, I just, whatever works for them, you know, I'm going to let them do that and then try to help them, you know, improve that. And I'm sitting here like, whoa, what is going on? Like, you can't teach a kid how to pass rush. And it was really bad. But like anything else, right? Mike Vrabel is brilliant. One of the smartest men I've ever met. Quick-witted, I mean, unbelievable. And I always said, like, you don't want to mess with him or Luke Fickell, because it was like having a tag team on your ass right now. And they're both so intelligent and so witty that they just will annihilate you. It's just, and, you know, in a fun way if you're on staff with them. But he's a brilliant human being. He's extremely smart. And that being said, he became a great football coach. And so I would challenge people that say, oh, this coach sucks, he's awful. It's like, well, he might not be very good at something right now, but coaches can grow. Coaches can change, right? Luke Fickell, just look at him, right? Albeit it wasn't a situation that he had any chance to succeed in when he was the head coach at Ohio State for that interim year, but he is 400 times the head coach today that he was that year. And so I know a lot of Buckeye fans are like, oh, I don't know if Luke could come back to Ohio State. Like, he wasn't successful when he was the head coach at Ohio State. And that's an opinion that honestly could keep him out of getting this job one day. And it's just a challenge I would give to all fans. It's like, coaches can grow and change, right? They can get better. But wanted to shout out Mike Vrabel, one of my favorite coaches I've been around. And just awesome what he's done in the NFL. I mean, he went to the NFL as a coordinator mainly to get away from Urban because he couldn't stand his ass. And I've told that story before. But went to the NFL with Bill O'Brien, and then, you know, found himself as a coordinator, you know, interviewed for some head coaching jobs, got the Titans job, and they were the one seed in the AFC. And just obviously they didn't finish the job. They ran into Joe Burrow. But just anyways, shout out Mike Vrabel. Awesome.
You know, it's really incredible, Zach. I mean, he started coaching at Ohio State 2011, and then obviously 2012-13 was the D-line coach. So, I mean, from 2011 to now, I mean, he's turned himself into not just a decent NFL head coach or just a head coach, a really, really good one, and has been able to succeed at the high level without kind of changing his personality, but also while improving as a coach. I'm blown away, and I think it needs to be talked about more. Mike Vrabel entered the NFL in 2014 as a linebackers coach and is now one of probably the top seven coaches in the entire NFL. Like, that is incredible, and it really speaks to kind of his work ethic, his attitude, and his ability to be a brilliant head coach and not do too much, and super likable guy. I mean, he outdueled Bill Belichick in a playoff game. Like, that's incredible.
Love to see it.
Mm-hmm.
You love to see it. And like I said, he's brilliant. And I can't even remember the scenario, but it doesn't really matter. He used Belichick's
strategy against him. It was about the punting and the special teams thing.
It's unbelievable. He used the Belichick strategy against Belichick. It's fucking awesome. Just really, really awesome. So shout out Mike Vrabel. And you know what? Shout out to the Titans for taking a chance on Mike Vrabel. And just, you know what? If there's one thing he is, he's a guy that gets it. You know what I mean? Like, he's one of those coaches that when you're playing for him, you just, you know, he's been there. You know, he's been in your shoes and he gets it. Like, he just, those players in Tennessee, they go into the locker room and they're like, this guy has been where I am and he's created an atmosphere that is player centric, right? It is for the players. It is, and not like Urban Meyer going to the NFL talking about family or some bullshit like that. Like, Mike Vrabel is running an NFL organization the way he wanted or wished it would have been when he was playing. And as a player, that has to be just amazing. And I know the feedback has been phenomenal from players and everyone really. So shout out to Mike Vrabel. I hope he gets a Super Bowl at some point. Will be awesome for him.
It's so interesting, Zach. He's like the opposite of Mike McDaniel, the new Dolphins head coach.
Oh, Christ, bro.
They're like, I'm going to tell you what. That was the most opposites.
First of all, I don't understand how that guy's a football coach.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand how he's like, when, and I don't know anything about him except for the press conference that I watched where he basically.
He's just a goofy dude.
But like, he could have handled that press conference and that question about his what race he identifies as. He could have answered that 100 different ways better than he did. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just like, I don't know. It was cringeworthy and bizarre, right? Like, sitting there like, well, I mean, he, without saying it, he basically said, well, I look like a white guy, so I've never experienced racism. And you're like, what the fuck? Okay. Like,
yeah. He said, honestly, I look white, but I know racism exists. But I identify as
I'm gonna tell you, you know what the most cringeworthy part of it was when he said that? Like, I have experienced it in my life. Obviously, my mom had to deal with it. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Your mom is the first example of racism. She's white. Mm-hmm. Like, I probably would have started with my dad, who's black, right? Like, I have, my family has experienced it because my dad, who's black, that's what you should have started with. The first thing he said was my mom went through it. Like, what? Your mom's a white lady. We could have a whole show about it, but man,
could you imagine like being in a locker room, Zach, trying to get fired up for a game, and then Mike McDaniel gets in there to give you the pregame speech,
right? And there's a guy who listens to our shows and subscribes, and he's a high school football coach that I follow on Twitter, and he always puts up, I think, I don't remember who the quote is. It might be Jay-Z or someone, but anytime something like this happens, he puts up a picture of that. This coach, and it's the quote that you love to see a black man get paid. Like, I was crying laughing. Like, obviously this is a joke, right?
Yeah, you love to see a black man get paid. Like, during Black History Month. Yep.
Oh God, Black History Month. This has got to be the worst Black History Month for black people ever. It's got to be.
I'm down bad right now, Zach. It's been a rough month for us, man.
I'm just saying, like, January was a better month. Mm-hmm. You know, in the media, in the public eye for black people than February's been. It's just like, oh my God, this is awful. Yeah,
we got all white law firms representing black, you know, heroes. Oh, supposedly, we got people calling Brian Flores the Rosa Parks of the NFL. We got my guy Mike McDaniel being a head coach. Looks like he can inspire people in a kitchen, let alone on a fucking football field.
That guy can't inspire a team of accountants. Oh, anyways, let's jump off the topic. Yeah, we got to talk about the Super Bowl.
We do.
Tell me,
before
we even get started, who you got? Who's going to win?
Dude, there's no reason for me to make this pick, but I'm picking the Bengals. There's no reason for you to make this pick, and I'll dig into it in a little bit. But I just love Joe Burrow, man, so I'm picking with my heart entirely, even though the Rams have Hall of Famers in every single unit.
Every fucking unit. They're so loaded. I think honestly, when I look at this matchup, it's literally – it's either Joe Burrow is that good that he can overcome everything, every mismatch on the field, and he can just get it done. And there's no reason to think otherwise, right? I mean, you look at the path the Bengals took after winning the first round. They played the number one overall seed, beat the Titans. They played the Chiefs and Patty Mahomes, the reigning Super Bowl champ. Or not reigning Super Bowl champ, but you know what, they were in the Super AFC Bowl, won the Super Bowl 2 years ago, whatever it was, and took down Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs. And it's like, you're looking at it like, well, why can't they beat the Rams? Because they beat those teams because Joe Burrow is that good. And you look at all the analytics. I mean, he's a top 3, 4, or 5 quarterback in every analytic in football. I mean, when it comes to, you know, getting blitzed, he's number one. Yeah, he's number one. Let me pull it up. Offensive grades, number two in the NFL when he's blitzed, behind Kyler Murray. And now the other side of this is Matt Stafford has the highest completion percentage in the NFL against blitz. So you're talking about they're both top three quarterbacks in most analytics. And it's just going to be such a duel, such a battle. And I really, really think that it's going to come down to how the Bengals can contain Cooper Kupp and what the Rams are going to do if they put Jalen Ramsey on Ja'Marr Chase, right? If that's their plan, which I'm sure is going to be part of their plan. It might be their entire plan, right? One, I'm excited to see what Ja'Marr Chase can do against Jalen Ramsey. But two, even if they are able to eliminate him, it's got to be a huge game for T. Higgins. C.J. Uzama is going to play now, they said, right? It's got to be a huge game for him. Joe Mixon out of the backfield has to be huge. And so they have weapons, right? And I really think the Bengals have a good shot at this. I really do.
Yeah. I mean, you've made all valid points. And like I said, you're just like giving me actual facts and data to support what my heart is telling me. I do want to talk about quarterbacks here for a second, Zach, because I think this is super interesting because Matt Stafford, number one overall pick, you know, obviously you went up against him in the SEC when you were coaching down at Florida, you know, had through for a boatload of yards his entire career. And now has been given new life. He's gotten away from the wasteland that is Detroit. First of all, this will be the closest Detroit ever gets to a Super Bowl. You got Eminem performing at halftime, and you got, you know, Matt Stafford, Detroit hero, out there playing. But, Zach, I do want to ask you, who is a better quarterback right now? Age out the window, Matt Stafford or Joe Burrow? Because, you know, career-wise, I was looking back through Matt Stafford's career, and his third year in the league, which was kind of his second full season because he did get hurt very early, only played three games year two. He threw for 5,000 yards and 41 touchdowns. And that felt dynamic, and it feels dynamic. But what we're watching Joe Burrow do feels a little different. It feels special. And if I'm off base because I'm, you know, with my heart,
no,
let me know.
No,
but who's a better quarterback?
I honestly think Joe Burrow is the best quarterback in the NFL right now. I really do. And that's not any type of fanhood or lens. I mean, you look at analytics, right? What Joe Burrow, what makes him so good is when you blitz him, he turns it up a notch. And when he's under pressure, he's the best quarterback in the NFL. He's better than Kyler Murray or some of these guys that are probably better athletes. I mean, he has the highest completion percentage in the National Football League when he's under pressure. He completes almost 60% of his passes when he's under duress. I mean, Matt Stafford is 17th. Like, Matt Stafford is a tall tree, right? He stands back there, and if he gets under pressure, he's not a great quarterback. And then the one thing I look at intently is, what does a quarterback do? Because we know deep ball quarterbacks. You might have a great deep ball receiver. You might be a great deep ball quarterback. Like, that's a big part of the game. Quick game and screens is a big part of the game. Like, Tom Brady has lived off of checkdowns, right? Peyton Manning made a career out of checkdowns. Not that he didn't make big-time throws, but understanding when to check the ball down and how to move the ball down the field is huge.
Having patience. It's like death by a thousand cuts. Some of the best quarterbacks ever, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, they were so good pre-snap that they took calculated risks. And if they could cut you 1,000 times and you look down and you're in a pool of blood, they'll take that. They didn't need the Aaron Rodgers and Matt Stafford haymakers.
Well, there's no doubt. And if you look at analytics of the NFL right now, right, when you, I look at throws from 10 to 20 yards as an indication for consistent success, because you can hit some deep balls, you can throw some screens, but if you're going to consistently be a dominant offense, right, I look for those throws between 10 and 20 yards, right? Those are your intermediate throws. That's what I classify them as. Joe Burrow leads the NFL in completion percentage on throws from 10 to 20 yards, 74% completion percentage. Matthew Stafford's 59%. So whatever that math is, 15% of the time, Joe Burrow is successfully completing those throws in that range more so than Matt Stafford. And it's just, he's just dominant. And he's just that guy. I don't know what to put it. Like, you look at, you know, quick throws. Like, Aaron Rodgers puts up all the stats, right? He's number one in the NFL when it comes to throws 0 to 10 yards, 84% completion percentage. Like, that's where he lives. Joe Burrow lives in the 10 to 20 range. And that's just critical, because you get third and 11, and it's like, oh, this is Joe Burrow's wheelhouse right here. And it's just, it's impressive to see.
No, I mean, I agree. Joe Burrow, if you could start a team right now and you know, handpick your quarterback, I don't know who else you pick. I mean, I think it's incredibly impressive the fact that he was able to come back from that knee injury as quickly as he did, and then be as productive as he has been. You know, when I'm sure that the knee injuries, I mean, they say they're supposed to be like 2-year injuries because you can't actually fully explode or do all things you want to do until that second year. And then there's the mental part of it as well. Zach, I would take Joe Burrow right now to start my team over Justin Herbert, over Kyler Murray, over those guys who really feel, Kyler Murray, I think, is going to be a really good one too. But like, some guys feel dynamic and other guys just feel different. Like, Justin Herbert to me feels very, very dynamic, like a real dynamic quarterback. I expect him to be very, very good. But I feel that Joe Burrow feels different. He may not be able to do all the things athletically that Justin Herbert does, but, you know, 2-minute drill or, you know, start to finish building a team around, you feel like he needs less support to be more dangerous, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense. The other thing that I think is of note, I mean, you're talking about the two stats that I always talk about are deep balls, right? Being able to push, you know, expand a defense, right? You throw the ball down the field 35, 40 yards. That defense, you know, you do it at a high clip. They got to respect that. They got to bail. And everything else opens up. Joe Burrow also leads the NFL in deep ball touchdowns. He's thrown 13 touchdowns on deep balls, right? And you look at this list and it's like, all right, well, where's Matt Stafford? He's thrown 9, right? And he's thrown 4 more deep balls than Joe Burrow has. So Joe Burrow is not only is he throwing the ball down the field, but he's making people pay. And you know, a lot of that's Ja'Marr Chase, without a doubt. But what are we talking about? Matt Stafford has the best receiver in the NFL. What I think is a key point here is, what is Cincinnati going to do with Cooper Kupp? That's the question, right? Because you look at it, people have been talking about, oh, Eli Apple's going to get cooked. Eli Apple doesn't play in the slot. Cooper Kupp mainly plays in the slot. So he's not going to cover him unless it's zone coverage or unless they have some bizarre plan where Eli Apple's like, they think he's like a fucking, you know, the best Revis. Corner in the NFL, which we all know he's not. I mean, he's the
Revis. You mean Eli Revis?
He's the 15th highest graded player on the Bengals. So he's not even, I mean, literally, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. He's the 6th highest graded corner on Pro Football Focus. But the question is going to be, Mike Hilton is their corner that plays in the slot. We know that Mike Hilton's not going to be able to cover Cooper Kupp all day long. So what is the plan for Cooper Kupp? And then is Odell going to have an Odell moment? Is he going to dominate in the Super Bowl and kind of reclaim his celebrity, I guess, or his status as a top receiver? It would,
if he dominates the Super Bowl, Zach, that immediately changes the football history regarding him, like immediately.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure.
What would you do to slow down Cooper Kupp? Like, how would you personally, if you were writing a game plan to slow down Cooper Kupp, what would you do?
It's tough. Cause I don't know that you can really completely eliminate him, but, you gotta play aggressive zone coverage, or you just have to star him. You have to put a bracket on him. You have to do something. And in the NFL, that's tough because the minute you bracket him, now you're removing help from anyone else. And
everybody's a dude. Yeah. Everybody's a dude in the NFL.
Everybody's a dude. And, I think that the one thing, I mean, that's you, I think you just got to play zone coverage. You can't play man coverage on him without immediate help. I mean, they're not going to play man coverage without help completely, but you can't play man coverage with a post high safety and think Cooper Kupp's not going to get open on a 12-yard route. Like that help it sounds good on a deep ball, but I don't know how important that is, you know, in the grand scheme of success. Right. So it's, I don't know that there's an answer. I think you just have to, play zone coverage or you have to bracket him. That's it. And then if you bracket him, honestly, my plan, if I'm the Bengals, is I'm going to put some form of bracket on him. Right. And then put my best corner, whoever they think their best corner is. And if it's Eli Apple, God help the Bengals. But I put my best corner on Odell. And then I say, here, if we can win that matchup on Odell, right? If we can do that, their only option is Van Jefferson. Because we bracketed Cooper Kupp, take him out of it. We can win a one-on-one with Odell. If they can do that, then now we're talking about, all right, can Van Jefferson beat our third best corner, right? That's the question.
Ooh-wee. Do you see a situation where you think, you know, the Bengals against the Chiefs opted to only bring three and then drop everybody else back into coverage? Do you think that could work against the Rams, or you think that's playing a dangerous game given the fact that the Rams have a better run game than the Chiefs?
I mean, I think it's a dangerous game. You know, it's all situational, though. Like, situationally, they can definitely do that, and they have to stop that. I mean, Cooper Kupp is what he's done this year is absolutely unbelievable. He has. So listen to this stat, Chris. Cooper Kupp has the highest completion percentage in the National Football League on deep balls, 67%. So when Matt Stafford,
you telling me, Mr. 4-6-2.
Oh yeah,
you hear that? For every combine warrior, every scout, you know, Mr. 4-6-2, when targeted on deep routes, is the highest completion percentage.
67%.
Wow.
67%. Now, bizarrely though, he only has 3 touchdowns on deep balls.
Well, he gets hawked from behind on those. Like, I've seen it.
Now, the other side of this now is he's not as successful on deep balls, but Ja'Marr Chase leads the NFL on touchdowns on deep balls. He scored 8 touchdowns on deep balls.
Wow.
Crazy.
Insane, dude. It's insane, and I'm curious. We do have a mailbag, Zach, and there are some Super Bowl questions as part of the mailbag that I'm kind of itching to ask now because they're relevant.
Yeah.
And the one is, who do you think's a tougher cover, Tyreek Hill or Cooper Kupp?
Tyreek Hill. He just got a different acceleration, different speed. He's just a different animal. When it comes to now Cooper Kupp, so it goes back to the conversation, right? Like raw ability versus technique and fundamentals. So Cooper Kupp is an absolute scientist. He's like a mad scientist, a mathematician. He is an expert at his craft. Like everything he does fundamentally, you watch and you're like, wow, that's teach tape. I mean, that's outstanding. And it's just that's his game, right? Being an expert at his craft. Tyreek Hill's not, it's not that he's not good fundamentally. It's just, he's just raw athleticism, raw speed. He's just an absolute freak of nature, the cheetah, right? And so I would rather cover Cooper Kupp because you know that everything is fundamental and technique. And Tyreek Hill, I mean, he ran a dig route against 2-man, which is impossible. Like you're not supposed to be able to do that. And he did it and scored a touchdown and ran away from everybody. And that's literally a defense you play to say, all right, we got Tyreek Hill, right? 2-man, you think about it, it's the corner, the person covering Tyreek Hill, he has complete freedom to let him beat him deep, right? They have help over the top. So he's not worried about anything deep. He's not worried about his speed. That's what the safety's for. All he worries about is underneath routes. And Tyreek Hill was so explosive on an in-breaking route when the corner's playing inside leverage that he dominated it. It dominated the corner, and he did things that you're not supposed to be able to do.
Yeah, I love comparison, Zach, and we talked a little bit off air. I was going to compare these guys to rappers, but I'll stick to, you know, in sports. But for me, when I watch guys like Tyreek Hill and even loop Chase into this, Ja'Marr Chase into this, they remind me of like Allen Iverson types. Like they're such gamers, they're such ballers. They shouldn't be able to do certain things, but they'll do it anyway at a crazy level. And it's like, well, you just kind of shrug your shoulders and like, well, I did what I was supposed to do, but that guy, you know, that guy's just better than me. And Cooper Kupp reminds me like a Chris Paul type. Like he's going to do the right thing at the right time, and he's going to dissect you from the science side of it rather than blowing you away with, you know, a 40-inch vertical and the ability to get to the rim whenever he wants. It's more of a pick your poison kind of thing. So I do agree. I think sometimes, like, I mean, Tyreek Hill is such an absurd game breaker, and I think he's a tougher cover because you do have to worry about him more after the catch.
Yeah, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. I think what I'm most excited about is Von Bell, to be honest with you, because he has completely, I don't know if you'd say revamp his career. Like he it's not that he ever fell off or was a bad player, but he's the highest graded player on Cincinnati's defense. And it's really cool to watch. He's just an unbelievable football player, like a tackler in coverage. I mean, everything he does, he's smart. He gets it. Like he's in the right position, man. And he's just ridiculous.
No, super underrated. I mean, he was part of that championship team, obviously, where he was, you know, covering up some Eli Apple mistakes, if I'm not lying, if I'm not mistaken, that championship year. What kind of dude was he, man? Because we don't really hear much from Von Bell. Like, you know, we know the kind of like alpha that Michael Thomas was. We always hear Eli Apple running his mouth. But what kind of dude was Von Bell?
Von Bell's a great dude. He's an ultimate shit talker. I mean, supreme confidence. Just a great dude. He was fun to be around. He's fun as a receiver coach. He was fun to go against, right? Because he talks so much shit and you could talk shit back. He's so competitive and, he was unbelievable. And, I think he's one of my favorite Buckeyes that, you know, we got to go against. And that's why it's so cool to watch him kind of be a veteran leader of right now, a Super Bowl defense, Super Bowl team.
Yeah, no, heard that. I love Von Bell, and he's got a tall task because, I mean, ultimately being the safety, it's your responsibility to make sure that these wide receivers don't kill you the entire game. And I think they have the best set of safeties in the NFL, making this matchup really, really interesting. I do want to flip to a different mailbag question, Zach, because someone wanted to know, can you explain in detail what a mat drill actually is?
Yeah, so a mat drill is basically, you know, it's an early morning workout. And what it is they call it a mat drill because they put out like gymnastics mats, right? And they do all kinds of different drills, right? Like you'll have it's like 10-second drills to absolutely blow you out. And so what you do is, you know, you have groups going around. It may be by position group, it may not be. And you have, let's say, six stations, right? So you would do a warm up, whatever that is. And then you go to stations, right? And it's a six station rotation. And what you do is you put your veteran guys up front and they have to go first, right? So they obviously get the most reps and they come out and do different drills, right? Like one of the drills may be a bear crawl station, right? Where they have to bear crawl, you put them through different things like go, you know, bear crawl right, left, back, forward, you know, hit it, do a push up, whatever. And you try to blow them out. And then, you know, then you tell them to get out and they do a forward somersault and get out of the drill. And the next group is up, right? The group behind them. And every time someone screws up, if they screw up a command, if they screw up anything, then you got to send them all back. So what happens is those older guys end up doing four times the amount of reps as anyone else. And so they get, it's a way to develop accountability, right? Because the young guys fucking up makes the older guys have to do more reps and they get pissed and they start to self-police, right? And so, you know, that's one station, bear crawls. Then there's like, you know, a number of, they do some combative stations where they'll do like, we used to do wrestling, like one-on-one basically wrestling, but they got away from it because, you know, people could get hurt or like, you know, guy gets his nose broken and you're like, what was CJ Stroud doing? How do you break his nose? You're like, oh, he was wrestling Taraja Mitchell. And you'd be
you
like,
mean just like straight wrestling or like the tire wrestling?
No, it's like, you know, there's a line 5 yards away and one guy starts down and the other guy gets on top and you know, you have 6 seconds and the guy on the bottom has to touch the line and the guy on top has to prevent him from touching the line. And it's just a way to develop toughness.
Another mailbag question. Did the team ever have a Super Bowl party? Did the units ever get together? Like, was there any that kind of camaraderie around the Super Bowl?
You know, I think the players did. The players would get together and watch it. We never did as a staff or anything. And we never really had an event for players or anything like that. But, you know, they inevitably watch the games together. And a lot of times, you know, like anything else, once a guy's been in the program for 2-3 years, he knows former players. Like right now, you look at this, who all's in this game from the Buckeyes, right? Jordan Fuller's hurt, but he's on the Rams, right? The Bengals have a ton. You would definitely count Joe Burrow and then Isaiah Prince, Eli Apple, Von Bell, who else? I saw Noah Spence, I think, is on the Bengals.
Sam Hubbard.
Who else? Am I missing someone?
Sam Hubbard.
Oh, Sam Hubbard. Christ. Probably one of their best players. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you know, then those guys know Sam Hubbard. They know Joe Burrow. The older guys definitely do. And so they're watching the Super Bowl because they're watching their friends, right? Yeah. So, yeah.
That's so cool. That's so cool.
It's crazy.
That's so fucking insane. And that probably makes you so happy, man, to see these guys like on the biggest stage.
Oh,
like,
it's amazing.
Like, this is the pinnacle of their career. Like whenever you climb a mountain, and at the end of every football mountain is a Super Bowl and then Canton. And so seeing the kids that you had in the program, it makes me emotional thinking about it. I'm about to go on a rant, but that's so fucking cool, Zach. I don't know how you handle it.
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, just I just reflect back to I was at my son's baseball practice this past summer at the local park here in Powell. And I pull up and Larry Johnson has a group of his NFL D linemen out there doing drills. And Sam Hubbard, Chase Young, you name it, every name you can imagine is out there. And I sat and talked to Sam Hubbard for a while, and just like you love it for guys like Sam Hubbard and Chase. I mean, but Sam Hubbard and Jalen Holmes are two of my favorite guys. Just and you know, everything I went through, everything that happened to me, you know, I didn't talk to Sam Hubbard after I got fired until I saw him at the park that day. And, you know, when I got out of my truck and I saw Jalen Holmes and I walked over to say hi, Sam Hubbard's face lit up. And he was like, "What, man, what's up?" Like, he was so excited to see me. And I'm like, man, that feels good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, through all the bullshit, he saw me and he was like, "Oh, that's my fucking guy." Like, I'm so glad I got to see you, kind of deal. So it was
people,
awesome.
Because people who've been around you, man, know how solid you are. I mean, I learned it firsthand. I mean, I met you after all the nonsense, and it became very clear how solid you were straight from the jump. And players recognize that. I mean, that's just like another way players recognize the phony and the bullshit. You can't fake with them. You can't be an act with them. I love it. I do have one more question from the mailbag. Is it easier going into games as a massive underdog, or is it more difficult to be in a game as a big favorite?
I guess it depends on
all
you
that
mean.
Just bullshit. It doesn't matter.
No, I mean, when you're an under, so, you know, obviously as an underdog, you have less to lose, right? You have more to prove, and it's, right. It's probably better mentally to be an underdog because you have that us against the world mentality. And when you're a favorite, you have everything to lose, right? You're sitting there like, all right, we're supposed to win. So if we don't, people are going to be like, this is a huge upset. You guys suck. But at the same time, like, there's a reason why there's favorites and underdogs. Like, it's easier to be a favorite because you're probably better. You're more talented, right? And you're supposed to win because Vegas knows better than pretty much everyone who's going to win a game. And so I'd say, like, motivation wise and team wise, you'd rather be an underdog because you have an us against the world mentality and, you know, that chip on your shoulder. But, you know, if I'm a coach, I want to be the favorite because that means Vegas thinks my team's better than the other one. So you have a better chance to win.
I believe Urban Meyer was undefeated when the teams were underdogs when he was at Ohio State, but I'll have to double check that. I was just curious, though, because, like, sometimes, I mean, I've been an underdog in some sports, and sometimes you can see faces on that team where it starts to feel like a little bit of doubt, like, yeah, we're the underdog because I don't know if we can do it. And then sometimes it's like when you're the favorite, a couple times, it's like you go into that game with that confidence that maybe even if, you know, if it's closer match, that confidence could help. But, you know, what do I know? I'm just Chris Drew from West Akron. But Zach, I have nothing else for today. You got anything else?
No, that's all I got. That's all I got. Get your Super Bowl square and then, oh, Twitter Spaces today at 2:00, right, Chris?
It is Friday. I'm tripping. On, yes, Chris. Twitter Spaces today. Last week was absolutely fire. You're not going to want to miss this week as well. I mean, we get it going. And that's really a chance for you to kind of live ask your mailbag questions and kind of force us to answer them. So,
yeah. So
Twitter we didn't talk about Brian Harsin reportedly getting fired. Holy hell.
Yeah, did he get fired? So I went in that Auburn space, and it was pure comedy. It you couldn't call it anything but comedy. Did you see that Twitter Spaces?
Yeah, tuned in, dude. Those Auburn Spaces, there's nothing like them in the world.
Nothing like them. I mean, it was hilarious. And they had someone they claimed to be the girl that Brian Harsin was sleeping with on the side. They were talking about how he's in an open marriage, and you know it shouldn't be held against him and all this stuff. But I haven't seen. They said it was getting announced last night that he was fired, and I haven't seen that. But just wild. It's going to be wild to watch it come out. I follow her on Instagram now, and she's out in Colorado on a ski trip. So she's living her best life.
Well, he didn't come back from Mexico. Like, he was in Mexico with his family, and they were trying to get him to come back home. And they put a clause basically saying that he had to, like, the coaches have to return in a timely manner when an investigation is going on. So he was like avoiding, like, he was staying in Mexico to not get fired. The last thing he was going to do was get fired on his day off and then came back. Now we don't know.
Yeah. And I mean, to his credit, right? To his credit, I would do the same thing. It's like, especially if he did nothing wrong or he thinks he did nothing wrong, because it's like, okay, if I didn't cheat on my wife with that girl, like, I'm going to ruin my family vacation because you guys heard a rumor and want to investigate it. Like, No, I'm good. I think I'm going to stay in Mexico. If you want to fire me, fuck off. That's kind of his opinion.
Well, though they basically forced him to come back, they added this clause about, you know, doing things in a timely manner under investigation literally 2 days ago. So it was like in reaction to him not coming back from Mexico. But I mean, I wouldn't come get fired on my day off anyway. Like if no. He felt like he was going to get fired, or if he wasn't, either or, like either he did nothing wrong and this is all a waste of time, or he did something wrong, but I'm still not going to end my vacation early to come get fired, to come get worse news.
So, right. He's going to get fired either way, right? If he's going to get fired, he's going to get fired. So why end my vacation and come in to get fired? If I'm going to get fired, fuck that. I'll be back on Tuesday. Then you got a chance to fire me.
And rumor has it he is back. There was that one photo of the back of his head surfacing saying he was back in the Auburn facility, but I don't know if it was actually him. But Zach, now that's all I have for today.
All right, Chris. I appreciate it. Appreciate everybody tuning in. Menace out.
Menace out.